Details today on the overseas contingency operation budget for fiscal 2015. The White House will ask for $60 billion in the latest edition of the YOCO budget, and it includes an extra $5 billion request for a new counterterrorism fund, too. You can read about the details at federalnewsradio.com. Roger Zackheim is of counsel at Covington and Burling, former deputy staff director of the House Armed Services Committee, and he is writing about the relationship between Congress and the White House on defense budgeting in Real Clear Politics. Roger, congratulations on this piece. You write that there will be those who say the Senate couldn't overcome the same political vagaries that drove the House defense bill. And you write specifically about what the issues were on the House side. When we think about that and then think about the context of the YOCO coming, it seems to me that you're arguing that we might see a pretty slow summer when it comes to trying to sort all of these things out, Roger. Am I on target there?
Yeah, and I think you are, and thanks for having me on the show. There are a lot of things that have to be sorted out. The OCO is just the latest example. $60 billion is the number that everybody was trying to figure out, you know, what it would be. Congress hasn't had a chance to marinate on it and figure out what priorities should be included there. And then, as you mentioned as well, the president's added on a $5 billion counterterrorism initiative fund, which I think there's a degree of skepticism about, you know, what is that going to do and how is that different from previous attempts. So, you know, the more you put into it, the more people are going to have questions and the longer it will take.
You write eloquently in this piece, and you spoke eloquently recently at the Center for a New American Security Annual Conference about where the Pentagon is now. And you write in this piece, scores of unwanted, unneeded programs have already been cut while many military modernization programs are buckling under budget pressure. We're well past the point of pruning the low-hanging fruit. That sounds to me like an argument for sequestration being over and defense budgets continuing to go, at least if not up, at least stay where they are rather than the cuts that we expect to see moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, the piece and the point I was trying to make is a lot of people are unhappy with the priorities and choices that the Congress has made in the House, and now we're seeing the Senate, on what should go be funded and why they're not getting rid of force structure, for example, or personnel to live under sequestration. And the bottom line is that some people view that as parochial. I think there are other factors at play, such as they're unwilling to make a cut to force structure that they think are reversible, that they think they security environment globally requires. And as a result, there isn't this alignment between what the Pentagon thinks it needs to do versus what the Congress thinks that the Pentagon ought to have.
A lot of people are unhappy with the specifics, as you state, but a lot of people are happy with the overall top line and the trend there, Roger. And you have two issues there, two lines that are going to cross, or you argue in this piece, are already crossing on that graph that it leads to just a tremendous stalemate.
Well, it does. A stalemate, or actually perhaps worse, a train wreck, and you put your finger on it. So I think what's happening now is the defense committees are saying, we're not going to make these decisions that reduce force structure and capabilities in a reversible way, and we're going to live to fight another day to perhaps try to increase the top line so it can accommodate some of these priorities. Whereas the Pentagon, it took them a little bit of time too, understandably so, said, no, we just have to live under these sequestered numbers. You know, perhaps the A-10 is the most notable example of where the Congress is unwilling to give up force structure that perhaps is legacy and not needed. But there are lots of other examples, and I point to a couple in the piece. Tomahawk missiles come to mind, for example, where, hey, you know, there could be a contingency in the not-too-distant future where that type of capability is required.
It sounded to me, this is reading between the lines, and if I'm inferring something that wasn't there, I apologize. But it sounded to me as I read what you wrote, and we have a link to it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, sounds like you're trying to find and solutions instead of the either-or discussion that we seem to be having about this topic.
Yeah, and you know, I'm pleased you read between the lines there. That's certainly what I was trying to say within the lines themselves. You know, one thing that comes to mind in the era where perhaps that could be viewed as constructive and trying to move the ball forward is in the reform and benefits pile. You know, whether it be BRAC or what we can do on military health benefits or on retirement issues, a lot of the proposals come over from the Pentagon the past few years. And, you know, what I say is that they come over in snail mail and they collect dust. The Congress doesn't really haven't done anything with them, at least not to the liking of the Pentagon. And if there's work to be done there, I think the manner in which the political branches engage to address those issues has to change. And I don't think there's been a serious negotiation, particularly with the people in the Congress who are responsible for defense policy, the 80-plus members in the House and Senate that are on the authorization committees. And so a new approach that kind of tries to find some middle ground is required, and perhaps with the Benefits and Compensation Committee, or this Blue Ribbon Panel, you know, some of their recommendations perhaps will give that opportunity. But, you know, the orientation needs to change. The approach needs to be different.
Now, you may be a little biased about the Compensation Commission because your very esteemed father is a member of that commission. But Do you have some confidence that when they bring their report next year to the White House and to the Pentagon, that that may also have some influence on the discussion about that issue on Capitol Hill?
Well, family allegiance notwithstanding, I think, for disclosing that, I was about to. I think the halls of Congress are littered with blue, ribbon panels giving recommendations. I think that the real challenge is what the political actors do with it and whether or not they'll engage differently. And I think that's what I'm encouraging, that the respective leadership, committee leadership, chairman and ranking members and the senior leadership and the E-ring engage and say, okay, what can we do here? What can we get? As opposed to saying, this is my must-have, and then, basically just being ignored.